Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Thanks for being here. As ever, we are almost at the end of week one of the final interlull of 2018. Hurrah! It feels to me, and I know it isn't the case, but it feels to me like we've had more interlulls than usual. But no, it's been three. This will be the third one since the season began, which I think is fairly normal. There was one at the start of September, there was one at the start of October, and now one mid-November. So yeah, this is the third one, but still, it's 6 weeks. That is a fair chunk of time. Like if someone said to you, go away on holidays for 6 weeks, you think that's ages. But the 6 weeks would go by in a flash, in an instant, because you'd be having a good time, wouldn't you? You'd be doing something you like doing in a place you wanted to be, whether it was up a mountain, in a cave, on a beach, in a hammock, drinking pina coladas. Look, we all have different wants and needs when it comes to our holidays, but the common denominator is that we enjoy them, therefore the time goes quicker. But 6 weeks without Arsenal, that feels like a lot longer. Like when you spend half an hour playing a video game, the half an hour goes, flies by. But if you've got to spend half an hour in the dentist chair, well, that doesn't fly by as much, does it? It's one of those like Friday afternoon when you're in school and the clock is on the wall and you look up and it's 3:05 and school's out at 4:00 and an hour later you look at the clock and it's 3:05. It's that kind of thing. That's what the interlulls are like. The football, the modern football equivalent of all that. But we do have a podcast for you, at least, to help fill the gap that Arsenal have left behind. In a few minutes' time, I'm going to be talking to David Ornstein, because he's done a very interesting story this week about Reece Nelson, who, of course, is tearing it up on loan in the Bundesliga with Hoffenheim. Scored 6 goals so far this season, and David went over there to talk to him and Jadon Sancho, his best friend, who, of course, moved from Manchester City to Borussia Dortmund on loan and then made that deal permanent. And he, too, is having a great time in Germany. So is there something going on with young English players going abroad? I'm going to chat to David about that and a few other bits and pieces besides. Before we get on to that, though, I think we should just take a moment and thank the owners of Premier League football clubs for making sure that Richard Scudamore has a nice Christmas. A nice Christmas. Because he was leaving his job of executive chairman of the Premier League, being replaced by a lady, Susanna Dinage, who has come from Discovery, the Discovery Group. She was in charge of the Animal Planet channel, the TV channel. I think there might be a discussion to be had there about that appointment. Maybe it's just me, but I think the idea of the Premier League appointing somebody who comes not from a football background, but from a broadcasting background is really interesting. Maybe that tells us what they think about their product, if you like. And that's what the Premier League is, isn't it? It is a product. And what has driven that product, what has driven the value of that product and the worth of that product more than anything else are the TV deals. So I think it's really quite interesting that they brought somebody in with a real background and experience in broadcasting and TV and everything else, and not somebody who comes from a football background, a football administration background, somebody who is looking at football, the sport. This is somebody who's coming in to look at how football can be broadcast into more homes, how they can sell the rights for even more than they've sold them in the last number of years. You might remember when the last deal came in, it was slightly down on the previous deal. They've been going up and up and up and up, but now maybe we've hit the top of the curve. What should we do? Should we think about football, the game? Maybe this is a reaction to the arch-capitalism that exists within not just football, but all sport these days. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe the idea should be to give people something back, a bit of what they loved about the game, about what made them fall in love with the game. Maybe we should concentrate on that. Or maybe we should get somebody from one of the biggest broadcasting platforms in the world to see if they can find a way of selling rights for even more than we sold them before. Maybe that's just me being, you know, a little bit too cynical. Because what are we fans, if not the lifeblood of the game, the wallet of the game, the purse of the game, the bank of the game, the Fort Knox of the game? We are the gold which fuels everything else, the cows which are milked season after season, whether it's season tickets or TV subscriptions or merchandise and everything else. Without us, the game is nothing, but they know they've got a captive audience and they know they can sell us more. More choice. That's what you guys need. More choice. It's not fair that just one broadcaster has the rights. More choice. That's what you need. You need it. Okay, more choice means more subscriptions. But you're better for it because you've got the choice of having to pay more for what you got for one price the last time. But look, no, we have the best interests of football and football fans at heart. Of course we do. We wouldn't just rapaciously squeeze every last penny out of you. No, we wouldn't do that. It's why I have to say I'm a little bit surprised at some of the reaction that I've seen to this £5 million bonus that football clubs, Premier League clubs, were asked to pay to Richard Scudamore, the outgoing executive chairman of the Premier League. He was leaving his post. Susanna Dinage was coming in at the start of the year. And Bruce Buck, Chelsea chairman, wrote to all the Premier League owners and said, you know what, we should have a little whip around here for old Dickie. He's done a lot for us. He's made us richer. How about you give him £250,000 each and we can send him on his way, because he has made so much for us. He has done so much for our investments in these football clubs that we care about so, so, so much. And what better way for us to show our appreciation of that than to give him £5 million. £5 million. £5 million. This is a guy who earned £2.5 million last year. His basic salary was £900,000 a year, but with bonuses, it all came up to £2.5 million a year. After tax, that's around £24,000 per week. So, you know, clearly he needs a bit of a helping hand here. He's only had this job for 19 years. I know his salary has probably increased over the course of that 19 years, but this is what happened. So they ask all the Premier League clubs to give £250,000. Fans rightly are outraged, saying, you know what? Each club could do an awful lot more with that money than give it to a millionaire. £250,000, maybe it's not a huge amount of money in the grand scheme of things when you take into account footballers' wages and what football clubs turn over and how much money they get, but still, think what you could do with £250,000. You know what you see now all the time? You see groups of fans getting together before games and saying, look, if you're coming to the game, there's a food bank on the way. Maybe you could donate some food, because there are people who have so little that they need food banks to survive, to feed themselves and their kids and their families. I mean, could £250,000 from each football club contribute to that in some way? How many tickets would it subsidize for young fans? How much could you give to community projects? How much could you give to grassroots football to invest in the game? As somebody very cleverly pointed out on Arsblog News in the comments, you know, if they really wanted to honour the work that he did, why didn't they set up a foundation with that £5 million? As he said, the Scudamore School of Sports statue of the man outside, like Zoolander, the Richard Scudamore School for kids who can't play football good but want to do football good too. You know, think about what you could do with that £5 million. And so the Premier League then release a statement and tell us that Scudamore is being kept on For 3 years on a consultancy basis, and this £5 million that the Premier League clubs voted for is going to be paid over the duration of that 3 years while he remains in situ as a consultant. So we're to believe that this was the plan, and it isn't just a way to kind of sugarcoat what is one of the most appallingly ill-judged moves that the Premier League have ever made. Right? Richard Scudamore was paid a basic salary of £900,000 a year. That was his basic salary for doing all the work as the executive chairman of the Premier League. And we're supposed to buy a story which tells us that he's going to be paid, what, £1,666,666 a year for some, like, part-time consultancy? Get the fuck. These cunts really think that we are stupid. They think we're stupid idiots who would believe anything. And going back to why I was saying I was a little bit surprised by it, as more and more shit like this happens in football, where it will require collective action from fans that puts aside rivalry and everything else for the benefit of the game. And people say, well, he did a great job. Why shouldn't he get a £5 million payoff? Yeah, he did a great job. He was really fucking well paid for it as well. Really well paid. He got a bonus of double his salary and a bit more. Well done to you. You did a very good job. Here's your salary again and another half a quarter of £1 million on top of that. That's his reward for doing what was seen to be a very good job. And the, it's just business. This is what happens. We should just accept it kind of thing. I don't think we should. I think we should say if we're fucking pissed off about it or outraged about it or we feel like it's not right. Why shouldn't we say that? Because the more you go on and the more you shrug your shoulders at things, the more they do it and the more they get away with it. And ultimately, who's paying? Who the fuck is paying for this? Fans are paying. You're paying, I'm paying, they're paying, whether you're Arsenal, whether you're Liverpool, whether you're Tottenham, whether you're Man United, whatever. Stan Kroenke didn't dip into his own pockets, did he? Take out $250,000 and say, thanks, old Dickie Scudamore. You made me richer than I was. Here's a token of my appreciation. Now, clubs will pay for it. The money that you and I put into our club and other fans put into their clubs comes out when it could do a lot more and goes into the pockets of a rich man. Millionaires making another millionaire even more wealthy. And it's fucking bollocks. I don't know what we can do to stop it, but unless we actually think about it and express some measure of unhappiness at it, nothing will ever change. And he should be absolutely embarrassed at taking that money. He should be embarrassed. He won't be, of course, but he should be. Daniel Levy, the Tottenham chairman, said, we're all very supportive. He has unique knowledge and experience. All the clubs are behind it. Yeah, I can imagine you'd be behind it. This is a guy who pays himself more than any player at Tottenham. Still can't get a stadium built in time. But I guess that's a separate issue. It's hard not to be cynical, isn't it? We pay through the nose to watch football. Whether it's your season ticket, whether it's your TV subscription, they take us for every single penny they can get. And we all understand it. We all know why. We all buy into it. Until such time as there comes a breaking point for people. And there will, and there have been. I've seen it down the years. People who have just said, not doing it anymore. Not paying those subscriptions. Not paying those season ticket prices. And they walk away. And they leave something behind that they love because they've been pushed too far. And everyone has their own breaking point, I guess. Everyone has their own line in the sand. But shit like this pushes you ever closer to it, I think. Anyway, you might disagree. You might think it's a fair reward for the work that he's done over the last 19 years. That's a drop in the ocean. That if football clubs wanted to do more about ticket prices and community projects and grassroots football and all that, they could do it if they wanted anyway, which is true. It's true. But every now and again, you're reminded of what really drives the people who are in charge of a game that we all love and devote a lot of our time to, a lot of our lives to, and it just sticks in the craw a little bit. So look, let's leave that behind and move on. So joining me now on the Arsecast, somebody who we normally have on around transfer window time, but David Ornstein's knowledge of Arsenal goes a lot further than just transfers. And this week, David, welcome back, by the way. Sorry.
Thanks, Andrew. A pleasure as always.
But this week you've been talking to two young English footballers who are making headlines in Germany because of the performances that they're putting in. One, Jadon Sancho, and the other, who will be of great interest to Arsenal fans, of course, is Reece Nelson, who's on loan at Hoffenheim for the season. Maybe not the entire season. We'll see what happens there, and I might ask you about that in a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting, isn't it, to see two young English players go away on loan to a big league. Obviously, Sancho is not on loan anymore at Dortmund, but Reece Nelson is on loan at Hoffenheim. And often we associate these loans with a kind of, well, we don't know quite what to do with them at this stage in their development, so we'll throw them out there, see if they can go to a Dutch club or a French club and maybe play a few games and man up a bit, as it were, mature as players. But what Reece Nelson is doing is really something else.
It really is, yeah. And if we look at both of them, it's a fascinating development that we're seeing in English football at the moment. The national teams had fantastic success in the age group competitions in 2017. And that brought the issue of playing time ever sharper into the focus of all of us, really. And it wasn't lost on them and their representatives and their clubs, to be fair, as well, who want to see them playing just as much as anybody else. The problem is that the stakes seem too high for many clubs and managers to allow them to learn in the Premier League environment, with the pressures that come with trying to win matches and not making mistakes. And perhaps that's not so pressing an issue overseas. There had always been this idea around the travel shy British players who were in a comfort zone and didn't want to be pulled out of it. But after those age group successes, I think there was a greater appreciation of the possibility and of going abroad, and the desire for clubs overseas to take English talent, because in countries like Germany and the Netherlands, English players are incredibly highly regarded. Spain also, although none, Marcus McGuane from Arsenal aside, have really made the move over to Spain at a young age. And allied to that was an interest clearly from the representatives of these players. And I know from a while back, actually, the representative of Reece Nelson and Jadon Sancho, who also represents Chuba Akpom, formerly of Arsenal, they were talking to Borussia Dortmund a few years ago about taking Akpom over there. The deal wasn't quite right for them at the time. They decided it would be better staying at Arsenal. And I think with hindsight, they saw that that was the wrong decision. He didn't get any game time at Arsenal, a bit of injuries, bit of loan deals, and then has gone off to PAOK Salonika now. And they learned from that, sort of, you could call it a mistake or that occurrence, and decided to make the leap this time round. And it's paid off spectacularly, so much so that I think many are now going to, or I know many other agencies and agents are, of English and British players are looking at the example of Sancho and Nelson in particular. There are other players, of course, as well. Reece Oxford have been at Mönchengladbach. There is another boy at Mönchengladbach now who is not playing so much in the first team, but he's fluent in German and he's very highly regarded there. There are Chelsea loanees in other countries, a former Arsenal player, Dan Crowley in the Netherlands. And I'm trying to think if there are any more that I've heard of who are highly rated.
But Chris Willock, of course, was a young Arsenal player, went off to Benfica B.
Yeah, that's right. Although he doesn't seem to have taken off like some of the others. But certainly I know that agents are very conscious of this now, and they're making moves like never before and holding talks to potentially bring their clients over, having seen what it's done for, in particular, these two. And so when I was talking to the German football expert, who you know well, Raphael Honigstein, over in Dortmund last week, it was when we went to see the boys, he was telling me that he thinks Jadon Sancho is a game changer, because he, of course, has made the permanent move. He did so over a year ago now, and pretty much everything has gone well. It couldn't really be going better at the moment, you know. And the same weekend that his contemporary from Man City, Phil Foden, got a couple of consolation minutes, really, at the end of the Manchester derby, he was playing 90 minutes and starring with a hand in two goals for Borussia Dortmund against Bayern Munich in the Clásica, and making more highlights reels all over the internet and going viral. It was perfect timing for us to speak to him, of course. And then Reece Nelson, who has been more prolific from a goal-scoring sense. A much smaller club in Hoffenheim, less pressure than Sancho will be feeling, and he's only on loan. So, of course, he will be going back to Arsenal, all being well. So it's a very different situation, but he is absolutely reveling. And from a few people I speak to within football, coaches and people who know the youth scene very well, they say he's every bit as good as Jadon Sancho. Some people feel potentially even better. Slightly different, of course. Even though they can occupy the same position,
yeah.
I think maybe Nelson has a little bit more variety in his game, and Sancho's perhaps a little bit more devastating. But yeah, so Reece Nelson's loving it over there, genuinely, and I'm more than happy to tell you much more about my visit over there. And so far, so good for both of them. It really could be a step change for English football.
Yeah, I mean, I'm... curious as to what your thoughts are on why this is happening, because, as you said, the English players have tended to be a bit insular, and you can understand why. You know, if you're at a big club like Arsenal, you're well paid as a young player. You may not play as much, but comparatively to what that young player might earn in Germany or Spain, France, it's considerably more. Is there perhaps a realization that in order to make the most of a football career, which is short, but which I suppose it's better to have a long career with a measure of success and development than be a very highly thought of youngster who never quite makes the grade because he doesn't play enough in his formative years. Is that playing a part in this decision making? I mean, you could answer perhaps in general terms, but also when it comes to Reece Nelson, was the fact that Jadon Sancho was over there, was that a reason why he thought it would be a good idea to go there, or is there something else driving that decision?
A bit of both. Definitely, Sancho was an influence on Nelson. They're best friends. They grew up together in Southwark. They played together at a very young age. They've always remained close. Nelson was telling me about the WhatsApp group that he's on with Jadon Sancho and some of their other friends from back home. They don't get to see each other so much in Germany, but when they have 2 days off, they fly back to the UK together, and they're back home with all their friends like the old days. And Reece Nelson was very clear that it was Sancho for him who was the trendsetter, and he decided that gave him the confidence to come over. And now many English players who he knows, because of course these boys have come up through the England ranks, so they know boys from many other clubs at a similar age to them. They're all asking Reece Nelson, and I'm sure it's the same for Jadon Sancho, what's it like out in Germany? What's the Bundesliga like? And of course they're saying wonderful things back, because they're having such a great time. And they really are having a great time. They don't appear to be homesick to me. Reece Nelson has his mum, brother and sister, I think, in an apartment with him in Heidelberg, which is about 35 minutes drive from Hoffenheim. It's a very famous university city. It's gorgeous, really. And there's lots of restaurants, shops, amenities. Anyone would have a good time there, whatever age, really. And Jadon Sancho's in an apartment with his dad, He's got a chef that Dortmund recommended. He used to be with the national team. I think we'd all like that at 18
absolutely,
years old.
Yeah.
And so for Reece Nelson, there was definitely a precedent there, a role model. And if we look further back, we're going back to the late 1970s when it was the likes of Kevin Keegan, Tony Woodcock, and a few others who went to Germany. But they were very much the finished article. They were already, well, Keegan's case, he was already a star name when he went to Hamburg. And there was nobody in between that. And that shows the importance of role models. They didn't, none of the English players who, as we know, with the advent of the Premier League and the influx of so much money, we had this argument that English players have got a comfort zone. They're getting too much too soon. They're not cleaning the boots anymore. It's a very comfortable life. And that's the truth. So they were earning more than they could ever imagine. And although they weren't getting first team opportunities for many of them, it didn't really matter. And they had no evidence that going abroad would make things even better, let alone the fact that they would earn less money if the overseas clubs were paying them. It's a pretty daunting prospect for anybody, I would imagine. But when somebody breaks that mold, like Sancho has done, then clearly it's going to encourage others to come. If you look at the statistics as well, I think that's a really key factor here. This week, there were 61 English qualified starters in the Premier League, 27.7%. And that the average for the season now stands at 29.8%, which is down from, I think, 33% roughly,
right,
at the in the 2017-18 season. The all-time low is just a couple of percent lower. So and that was from a couple of years previously. In the top six clubs, it's even lower. 21.2% of players of English qualified players were starting for the top six clubs last weekend. So it's a pretty bleak picture, I think. If you look at the minutes played by players aged 21 or under in the Premier League so far this season, it's just 5.3%. And I think the penny is now finally dropping. That combination of foreign leagues and clubs seeing how good the English players are via the tournaments and success and their scouting of club football. They're playing much more regularly in the sort of youth Champions League or whatever it's called now. So they're getting exposure to these other clubs, and that key thing, the opportunity.
Yeah.
When I said to you at the start of this answer that it's a bit of both, there may be something else in this as well. There may be representatives and agents who are sensing new markets and new money for their clients,
sure,
and playing the long game here, knowing that a stop in Germany and getting 90 minutes to football or being able to score goals in the case of Reece Nelson in the Bundesliga and in the Champions League is going to significantly increase the player's value coming back to the Premier League, potentially, if they just see it as a stepping stone, or even to, in the case of Nelson, in the case of Sancho, perhaps even bigger things, some of the very biggest clubs in Europe, which is great for them and their representatives from a career point of view. And also a financial point of view.
Yeah, I suppose it's interesting, isn't it, that this is coming at a time when we're not quite sure what it's going to be like for young English players if they want to go abroad, if they want to go to Europe in the future. You know, up until now, it's still possible to travel and work and live in the 27 member states of the European Union. With everything the way it is right now, we don't know if that's going to be the case, if that's going to be something that they'll enjoy in the future, which would obviously be a terrible thing, I think, for those young footballers from England and also for footballers who come from Europe to play in England. So that's a different discussion, though. The timing of it is quite interesting in that regard.
Yeah. But
when it comes to Nelson himself, you know, he's scored 6 goals now in whatever it is, 8 games or 9 games. Do you think that he has exceeded his own expectations in terms of what he wanted to achieve this season? Because he surely would have liked, thought, I'm going to go, I'm going to play, I'm going to try and make an impact when I play. But to win games for Hoffenheim, to score, he came on the other day and scored within 90 seconds of coming on. You know, he's having a huge impact. he must be thrilled at the way it's gone for him, because when you are targeting a first-team place at Arsenal, which is what he says he wants. He wants, in your piece, you know, he says he wants to come back and be a legend at Arsenal, which is great, and we all want that for him as well. He's not doing his chances any harm at all, is he, by making that kind of an impact so soon?
Yeah, and without sort of meaning to plug my...
Plug away.
and video pieces too much... I would urge people to go and watch and read them, because you can see the in his words and in his facial expression, the sort of enthusiasm and invigoration that he has for what's going on out there. It's absolutely incredible. Surely he didn't expect it to be going this well. It's a bit of a dream scenario for an 18-year-old boy. 6 goals in 7 league games, it is actually, and right. 1 assist in the Champions League as well, coming on and, as you said, at the weekend, winning a match for Hoffenheim and being a very popular member of the dressing room, from what I hear. I've been told that he is, from people outside of Hoffenheim who know the club and staff there very well, that he has impressed Julian Nagelsmann incredibly, in the way he has always been asking questions, seeking extra work, seeking advice on which areas he can improve on, and putting that into practice as well. I think the likes of Nagelsmann and Lucien Favre at Dortmund, I think they would always sort of err on the side of caution when speaking publicly about these guys. They don't want people to get too carried away. They want to keep a lid on the sort of the hype that's building around them. But Nagelsmann, in the quotes that I've seen recently, can't speak highly enough of Nelson. And I don't think that's a sort of mirage. I think that's true. I think that they're incredibly impressed by him. I don't know what his intentions were in the summer, whether he thought he... we didn't really get time to get into the Arsenal side of things, whether he thought he was going to figure in the first team shake-up. But one thing that is clear with Arsenal now and many clubs in the Premier League, they really are trying to target specific clubs and be absolutely convinced. And this is the same applies for those representatives of the representatives of those players, really very carefully looking at the clubs that these boys are going to now, and not wanting to waste time like you've seen for many players down the years. Yeah, I think back to a couple of Arsenal players like Carl Jenkinson and Cohen Bramall, who went together to Birmingham last season and didn't play at all. I mean, it's just a waste of everybody's time, and it causes real complications behind the scenes as well. These boys and these clubs are targeting clubs where they will flourish, and certainly in the case of Nelson, Hoffenheim's perfect for him. He is still going to be making mistakes. He's still learning, but he's now able to do it, and this is what he was telling me, without, in his words, getting a bollocking, without the pressure of the repercussions. And ultimately, that's desperately what so many of these players need now. Certainly someone like Foden at Manchester City, however good the training is there, and I'm sure it's incredible, you need to be playing matches.
Yeah.
Lionel Messi doesn't talk about the years that he spent training at Barcelona because he was playing. And these boys really need to play. And I mean, you know, Reece Nelson only came on for a couple of minutes. And his goal-scoring record, I think, is he's only played like 300-odd minutes and scored those 6 goals. But he is getting on the pitch. As for Arsenal's intentions with him, my understanding is they very much intend for him to stay there until the end of the season. They're not considering seriously bringing him back. They think it's ideal for his development to stay there until the summer and then come back. They're not looking for the short-term fix. And I think that's probably pretty wise for Arsenal on the long run. He's an 18-year-old boy who has potentially many years ahead of him. Mm. And throwing him straight into the fire mid-season in the Premier League, Europa League, FA Cup, etc., might not be the best thing for him, his development, as good as it sounds on paper, because he's scoring goals in the Bundesliga, and Arsenal look like they could do with a winger. I think Arsenal's plan was to... that Reece Nelson would come back next summer and take the squad place of Danny Welbeck,
who, yeah,
of course, wasn't being offered a new contract. What the Welbeck injury does for things now, I don't quite know. I think there have been some preliminary sort of informal discussions about now offering Welbeck a contract. If the there is certainly a will within some sections of the Arsenal hierarchy, if the numbers are right and if the deal is right for the club, bearing in mind that he'll be out injured for a while. Wow. I don't think it's a sentimental thing, but I think they value him very highly at Arsenal, and there could be some loyalty on their part in the thinking of potentially giving him a new deal.
Yeah.
However, I don't think that will stunt Nelson's development at all. I think he is very highly regarded at Arsenal as a person and as a football player. There was some suggestions when he joined Hoffenheim that it was permanent. I remember that day, 31st of August, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And there was a bit of panic that it wasn't quite clear whether he had gone permanently or on loan. And he told me last week that he was laughing at all the social media hysteria because he knew it was just on loan. He's an Arsenal fan, Reece Nelson, from boyhood. He is a boy still. And so I think he sees his long-term future there. But of course, and he's wise enough to tell me in the interview that this is a very short period of time we're talking about, you know, 6 goals in 7 league games. A lot can happen between now and the end of the season. And especially at this age, it's absolutely critical.
Yeah.
The key problem with development in English football for young players is that age, sort of 18, 19 and 20, the transition between the academy and the first team, youth football and senior football. And it's something that that Germany seems to have noticed, and ironically, Germany providing a solution to England's problems. And so I think everyone's got to be keep a lid on their sort of their excitement about Reece Nelson, but it looks pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the one thing is, well, a couple of things is that he is away from England, so, you know, he's not quite as much in the spotlight. I know the media world is smaller, and we're sitting here having spent 20 minutes talking about Reece Nelson, so it's not as if he's not getting any coverage or flying under the radar, but it is slightly distant from the UK media, who do, in fairness, of course, I don't include you in this, David, they do like to hype things up when things are going well, and when things don't go quite so well, it goes the other way, the old build them up, knock them down kind of thing, which I'm sure... Yeah. Some publications are well known for, but none that we would spend any time working for, of course. The point that he has signed a new 5-year deal with the club is very positive as well. Interesting about the January thing, and quite interesting, I have to say, about the Danny Welbeck situation, because I'm curious as to why they would offer him or think about offering him a new deal if they weren't until now. I mean, what's your sense about, if you know, maybe you don't, but what's your sense about what Danny Welbeck would like as he heads towards 28 years of age? You know, that's something that people haven't really thought about or spoken about too much. It's like whether Arsenal should offer him a new deal, but not whether Danny Welbeck necessarily wants a new deal at Arsenal with Lacazette there, with Aubameyang there, with Reece Nelson coming through. You know, maybe he does want to go somewhere and spend 3 or 4 seasons as the number one man at a slightly smaller club.
Well, Danny Welbeck is a great lad. He's a very wise boy. He's got good support around him. He's represented by his two brothers. They are very sharp and with their head screwed on, and all three of them and others who may work around them as well are in tune with the reality. And so if a contract offer materialises, it's really hard to say. We don't know the full extent of his recovery. And as I said, to be clear, there is a will within some sections of the Arsenal hierarchy just to discuss the possibility. Without being sentimental, the possibility of if he's going to make a full recovery and the loyalty that they would like to show to their players, possibly if the numbers work for Arsenal, which would clearly be a very different contract offer to what Danny Welbeck might have expected Arsenal to have made if he was fit, then if the numbers worked for Arsenal, then it might be possible. from his perspective, I think they will probably say the same thing if the numbers work for us.
Yeah.
And the opportunity is going to be there to get some game time once fit, and the rehab, which we know at Arsenal, I'm sure would be excellent. Then it might be doable. But they know the business well; they've been around for a long time. I don't think they would be averse to starting again somewhere else. It wouldn't particularly shock anybody. And he would be a good asset for somebody, provided he can make a full recovery. He's still of a decent age. He's shown this season that he can be an asset for a top club, and it's very cruel timing for a player who's been ravaged by injuries over the years. And it's too difficult to say now whether it will be at Arsenal or not. I think, it is a bit strange. I think there is slightly more chance now that it will be at Arsenal than before his injury.
Right.
I think it was definitely heading the way of an amicable exit, parting of ways. Because, as I said, his demands for if fit and as an England international who's a goal-scoring option would have been fairly high, and Arsenal, I think, would have seen that as probably not something that they wanted to be doing, with Reece Nelson coming back from Hoffenheim and pushing, and would cost them much less money, and they've got him on a 5-year contract already. But in the circumstances of how popular he is among the squad and what he's been through, then a contract on reduced terms may be a possibility.
Sure.
I'm not saying it will be.
Okay.
And so that's one to watch. I think the only thing now is just to wish him well. It's a horrible time for him.
Yeah, for sure. The people who will have to make that decision, Unai Emery, I suppose, will have some input. But Raul Senyehi is the head of football, and I suppose ultimately football decisions like that, contractual decisions like that, would have to be sanctioned by him. And you spoke to Raul Senyehi, and you also spoke to the new managing director of the club, Vinay Venkatesham, a couple of weeks ago. We read the transcript of that interview, and as ever with people like this at Arsenal, they say the right things, or they say things that we all want to hear about ambition, about achieving things, about taking the club in the right direction, about getting back to where we want to get back to, which is in the Champions League and challenging for the Premier League again. What was your sense of the two men when you interviewed them? Perhaps in comparison, I don't want to say necessarily, you know, these guys are better than the last guy, but obviously having some dealings with Ivan Gazidis in the past, could you see any or sense any marked difference between the two? Is the fact that Stan Kroenke and KSE are now the 100% owners, does that change the dynamic at boardroom level in some way now that they don't have the issue of Ali Shahrusmanov and his shareholding sort of sitting there like a white elephant?
Well, there was a marked difference in the atmosphere at London Colney that day to when I was there towards the end of last season, for obvious reasons, because Arsenal were winning when I was there, and the new era, and everybody is upbeat. There's a great intensity and positive atmosphere around the place, whereas it had got pretty dark at times last season and on many occasions in recent years. In terms of Vinay and Raul, they're full of energy, full of smiles and laughter and humour, very easy to chat to, and very relaxed. One difference was that we were seeing them. You know, we hadn't seen Ivan Gazidis for quite a long time.
Mm.
We saw him on the day that Emery was unveiled. We saw him on the day it was announced that Arsene Wenger would be leaving the club. And prior to that, we hadn't seen him do any interviews for a long, long time, having done a lot, comparatively a lot, compared to his contemporaries at many other of the leading clubs in his early years at Arsenal. But Ivan Gazidis was really scarred by, I think, by the criticism he received throughout his tenure. And, you know, there was a period where things looked up around the signing of the new commercial deal with Puma and the renewing with Emirates, which was a moment where he, as we all know, said that Arsenal were now ready to compete a level with the likes of Bayern Munich. And certain phrases like that and catalyst for change later on would come back to haunt him. I think he had been scarred and felt a little bit hard done by with the way he gradually took more and more blame for results on and off the pitch, and a lot of the opprobrium towards the Americans because they aren't often over in the UK or aren't there all the time was directed at the chief executive, and he's handsomely remunerated and I'm sure thick-skinned enough to take that. But I think as a human, I think he was probably scarred by it, and that's why we saw him speaking to the media far less at the end. And when we did, and you probably noticed it, when I asked him a few questions in the Emery news conference, he sort of retaliated a little bit, and I think that was his way of sort of just fighting back a little bit.
Sure.
Whereas these guys at the other end of the spectrum, in terms of they're just getting started. Vinay is has been at the club for a decade and is really well liked and highly regarded among all staff I've spoken to, and very, very highly rated in what he does. He's only, 37 years old? So he's a youngster for this sort of role, especially at a top club. And I think Arsenal have a really, really good person in him, and the fans should be comforted by that. Raul is a hardened veteran, really, of European football. He's a bit older, and he came from Barcelona, and he was involved with Nike before that, was involved in many of the big transfers at Barcelona, such as the arrival of Neymar and Luis Suarez, etc., contract renewals for Lionel Messi. And he deals with, he moves in circles of European football, like the ECA, around agents, he can deal with the likes of Jorge Mendes, Kia Jurabchin, etc. So their roles are very different. I think they can work very well together. I really do. I know it's a bit of an unusual setup for English football, but Manchester City have two heads in Soriano and Begiristain. And the way their lines of work are clearly delineated, you know, Vinay focusing purely on the sort of management and commercial side of things, whereas Raul was focusing on the football side of things. There's a separation. I did ask them what happens if you don't agree on something. And he said, we'll cross that bridge when it comes to it. It wasn't particularly reassuring. He did, but then again, at least he was honest. He didn't duck away from the fact that there will be disagreements and they'll deal with it like adults. In that management axis, don't forget now you've got Hus Fahmy, who I'm hearing exceptional things about. So hopefully the proof will be in the pudding and we'll see Arsenal avoiding.
Can I just jump in there just to ask you for a little bit more clarification on the role of Hus Fahmy? Because he was brought in, is he a contract negotiator? Is he somebody who just deals with the legal side of contracts? Is he somebody who has an input into the contracts that Arsenal are offering players or how the contracts are structured? What exactly is it that he is doing that makes him exceptional and sort of an asset to this team beyond somebody who can just draw up a contract?
Yeah, I think he's got an all-encompassing role around the contract process. So he will very much be invested in the decision to offer players contracts, not based on the footballing side, of course, but based on the financials, being very much across the budget on what can and can't be spent and the value relative to the age and the profile and the statistics. And that's also where Jason Rosenfeld plays a very, very important role. He gets very little media coverage. I barely ever hear his name mentioned, but he's extremely influential at Arsenal. And Huss is key in and amongst that as well. The drawing up of contracts, the negotiating of the contract, the delivering news and dealing with the agents and players themselves on the contractual front. He's said to be very sharp, yeah, on the legal side as well. Of course, that's his background with Team Sky. I don't think there will be nearly as much procrastination as there was before. I think they will get things done pretty clinically. Well, we've seen that with Ramsey, whether you like it or not. And so I think he's powerful in the decision-making process in terms of what they can and can't do, and also in the execution of the contracts. In terms of the very minute detail of exactly what he does within that, I'm not privy to it. And then, of course, you've got Sven Mislintat, the head of recruitment, who's taken on, as we can see, a bigger role than just player recruitment, because he was one of the key men involved in the decision to appoint Unai Emery and the interview process for the new manager. Wow. I get the sense from speaking to Arsenal that it's possible, by no means certain, but possible that they could be looking to bring in a technical director. And that will raise very interesting questions if they were to do that, because Sven has sort of taken this more expanded role, it would seem. And where would that put Raul Sanlehi as the head of football? Would it be Sanlehi's man? Now he is the man in charge of football. How would everybody work together? Because yeah. Ivan Gazidis put this structure in place, and he's now not there to see the fruits of his labour, so to speak. He put Vinay and the American ownership put Vinay and Raul together. They obviously didn't choose that, but they know each other. They have done for a long time through Barcelona and Arsenal, and they get on very well. But you know, nobody Ivan put Sven and Raul together on the football side, and Arsenal fans will obviously hope they get on, and we've got no reason to believe they don't. But they, you know, many people in Raul Sanlehi's position like their own man working with them. So let's see what happens on that front.
Right.
But I've just had a bit of a sense that there may be some consideration around a technical director, but nothing concrete on that. So let's see. But on your point about the ownership changes, that will be fascinating to see how that plays out, because Arsenal's budget is restricted by no Champions League football. As we've seen and heard, they're very unlikely to spend in January. Not definitely, but certainly there's not a great deal of money available. And there wasn't huge amounts, of course, last summer. And the question for the Americans, now that they have sole ownership and none of their investment will potentially be beneficial to Alisher Usmanov anymore, is will they inject some of their own money for the odd signing here or there, if they can be convinced that that it's worthwhile and can help Arsenal towards success.
You asked them that, and the line that they gave, and it's one we've heard before, is that they're committed to this self-sustaining model. So we spend what we earn, and you know, that's understandable from a business point of view, but it doesn't necessarily tally with the stated ambitions of KSE when they made the offer in the offer document about getting back to Champions League. And I think we can all accept that, you know, money is a very important factor when it comes to football and football success. It's not necessarily the only factor. You can improve, you can make improvements in other ways, of course, which is what Arsenal, I suppose, are hoping with Emery in this new footballing structure. But it does help. You know, and it all ties in, doesn't it? That you know, the football side of things, the business side of things. Like, it's easier for Raul Sanlehi to achieve things as the head of football if the business side of things brings in more money. But it's easier to bring in more money if we're achieving things on the pitch or back in the Champions League, and we're playing blue chip European football rather than the soggy gone off yesterday's chips of the Europa League group stages, for example. You know, so even with that line, I mean, did you get any sense that maybe that might be something that KSC would consider?
Well, that's obviously the sort of company line that was trotted out with that answer, and I think broadly speaking, that's the plan. Yeah, they're working on the basis that that's the plan. However, I would suspect that those involved in recruitment at Arsenal or on the football side, so you're talking Raul, Sven, and certain others, I think they will present a case to the American owners that. If they feel that they can sign a world-class talent, I don't know, say in the past that there were the reports linking Arsenal with Ousmane Dembele at Barcelona in the last transfer window. And of course, Arsenal admire him and they have that link from Mislintat to him from their he signed him for Borussia Dortmund and I think sold him to Barcelona. So if they can convince the ownership, and I'm sure that they will try, that a certain player at a certain point in the future is a viable is a gettable target,
yeah.
But they need an amount of money, then I'm sure they'll present that case. The answer, I have no idea what will come back from America. Some who know the Kroenke family, who I have spoken to in the past, say no chance. You would have seen it with their American teams. We know how they operate. We've seen it with Arsenal. And others say that you never know. Now that Usmanov's out of the picture and it's just their baby, then it becomes a... Obviously, that's logical. Of course, it's a possibility. We've got no evidence that will suggest it's possible, but I think there will be a desire from within Arsenal for them to inject some funds. The big question is how that will sit with financial fair play, because Arsenal can't just take money from their ownership without being able to match it in revenue.
We just do now, what Man City did and, you know, just get somebody else, make it look like someone else is paying for it. And you
get away
with it
scot-free. Yeah. Yeah, there's of course that possibility, but doing things the Arsenal way inverted commas would certainly suggest that won't be a course of action. And Arsenal have got the very serious consideration of financial fair play with a high wage bill, reduced revenues, and the Adidas deal will help, of course. And I think their key aim is to get back into the Champions League, and then the spending money will become slightly greater.
All right. Well, look, we'll wait and see what happens. It does promise to be interesting to see how it all goes, because I think we all think that Unai Emery needs two or three transfer windows to get the right kind of balance in his squad.
Yeah.
And maybe the role of someone like Sven Mislintat will become ever more important. If spending is restricted and we've got to bring in more players like Mavropanos and Guendouzi than Aubameyang and Lacazette, that might be a way of getting around it. But
they're very proud at Arsenal of the Guendouzi signing, a classic Mislintat acquisition. And I think his role is potentially going to be key, of course. He's got a history of it in his career now, of unearthing talents. I think that will be a key focus for him and the club. And also the youngsters coming through seem of real high quality at Arsenal now. I actually I asked Reece Nelson about the emerging talent, and I mentioned, you know, that Willock has been around the first team squad as well, and several others coming through. But I asked him if he could pinpoint, I think there's a forward, John Jules and Amici as well, Xavier Amici. And he said, yeah, very, very good players. But the one who is top, which is a real phrase I hear in football now when people want to explain that someone is the real deal. The one who's top, he said, is Bukayo Saka. He was at pains to point out to me that this boy is a different class. Very young, of course, playing above his age group at the minute. And again, we shouldn't heap too much expectation on him. But I'm hearing extremely encouraging things about him. So perhaps those signings of left field and also a bit of youth development will become Arsenal's way once again, of course, as it was some time ago under Monsieur Wenger.
Sure was. And of course, we didn't mention Eddie Nketiah and Emile Smith-Rowe and Ainsley Maitland-Niles. So, you know, maybe there is something growing from within as well, which would be great and very healthy. And I think everyone would love to see that kind of a contingent come through again, you know, alongside some good quality players that you bring in from the transfer market. But David, look, I'm always appreciative of your time. It's been fascinating.
It's a
pleasure. As always. People should check out the piece that you've done with Jadon Sancho and Reece Nelson. It really is very interesting. And we'll catch up with you maybe towards the end of January, see what's happening around that time, yeah?
Absolutely.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, Andrew. Always a pleasure. Anytime.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. As ever, fantastic to catch up with David. You can find him on Twitter at @BBCSport_David. Do check out the piece that he's done with Reece Nelson. It's well worth a read and well worth a watch if you can find the video. And we will try and talk to David again a bit later in the season, perhaps after the January transfer window closes, during which I'm sure Arsenal are going to do lots and lots of exciting business, which will thrill us and help us finish in the top four and win the Europa League. So that's a little bit down the line. We'll deal with that with David after the January transfer window closes. For now, though, I'm going to leave it there because it is an interlull. There's no game this weekend. There's nothing to look forward to, apart, of course, from an Arsecast Extra. Myself and James will be recording over the weekend or early on Monday. Not quite sure when yet, but I'll let you know on the site, let you know on Twitter at @ArsBlog. As ever, thank you very much indeed for listening. It's always great to have you along. If you wanted to give us a review or a rating on iTunes, that would be great. It pushes us up the charts and validates our very existence. So if that's something you feel like you could do, feel free. If not, don't worry about it. It's all good. Catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye.
Arsenal Football Club today announced a contribution of £1.2 million to Facebook owner Mark Zuckerberg. This is to acknowledge his contribution to the fact that without Facebook, we wouldn't have so many Facebook likes. Chairman Sir Chips Keswick said,
"In completely unrelated news, season ticket prices are going to go up the same percentage amount that's equal to £1.2 million.
Like that, suckers."
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.